glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at the divine lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. This is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Sai Ram, dear listeners, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory. Today is the 2nd of February 2017 and the current time in Prashanti Nilayam is exactly 40 minutes past 9 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. After an unseasonably pleasant January, the temperatures in the Divine Valley are slowly inching to near normal levels. Current temperature in Prashanthi Nilayam is 24 degrees Celsius, which in Fahrenheit is, I believe, 75 degrees. Later in the day, we are expecting afternoon highs in the mid-30s and overnight lows of a surprisingly cool and comfortable 18 degrees Celsius. The air is crisp and clean, thanks to no humidity and zero air pollution levels in our slice of heaven. The general outlook for the day is clear, with sunny skies and bright sunshine, plenty of it actually. And talking of sunshine, all of us, that is you and I and millions out there, who pray in the name of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. How lucky are we to have our personal source of sunshine in our lives. One who makes us happy when our skies are grey. To the splendor of our Sai, who radiates the brilliance of a million suns. With hearts filled with reverence and gratitude, at Radio Sai, we bow to him over and over again. How can we ever be grateful enough to the one being who has filled our lives with so much of love? Right now, even as we speak, our lives are brimming with his brilliance in red and gold, as we are set to celebrate the Chinese New Year here in the ashram. Dear listeners, life in our ashram is quite a lesson in human geography, and currently we are hosting thousands of people of Chinese origin from the entire Southeast Asian belt, from Taiwan and Hong Kong, and most importantly, from mainland China. Yes, you heard it right. With his grace and blessings, we hope to bring you sometime in the future more details of how mainland China is embracing the universal human values which form the cornerstone of Baba's teachings, that is, truth, love, peace, right conduct and non-violence, as they also resonate the virtues promoted by Chinese culture. As we welcome the year of the rooster, from Team Radio Sai, we wish all our listeners Gong Hi Fer Choi. And what better way to start than with two very engaging conversations, each reflecting the brilliance of Swami's infinite glory. In the second half of the show today, we will conclude the riveting episode of Trisway Divinity with Mr. Hari Ranjan Rao, which was debuted right here on Morning Glory last Thursday. Dear sisters and brothers, your feedback suggests that Swami had personally timed the airing of this interview conducted by my colleague Mr. Bishu Prushti. That interview is coming up at the bottom of the hour. But up first, a special conversation with three doctors from the United States of America who were in the Divine Valley recently, along with some of their other colleagues, to participate in the continuing medical education of Baba's doctors who are associated with our two general and two super specialty hospitals. This morning, I'm delighted to bring you the passion and candor of Dr. Kalpalata Guntupalli, Dr. Sridevi Devaraj, and Dr. Madhuri Madbushi. So, might I add that right now, Morning Glory on Radio Sai is your station to stay clued and glued to. So, please stay with us and enjoy the show. And if you wish, now is also the time to text, message, tweet, phone or email your friends and family, Samiti members, Sai Center members, to tune into Radio Sai's Asia Stream to listen to these very important and interesting interviews. By the way, dear listeners, I'd just love to share with you an interesting aside, which is that Dr. Kalpalatha Guntupalli, who is one of the guests on my next interview, which is coming up in a few moments, is an internationally renowned doctor. And her first visit to Parthi was when the Sai organization sought her medical expertise during Bhagwan Baba's hospitalization just days before the Mahasamadhi. So she came here purely in her professional capacity. And today, along with her colleagues, she comments on the Sai healthcare system mostly from her professional perspective. But her personal journey is equally engrossing and intriguing, I should say. And that we have recorded separately as an episode of Triswit Divinity, which I shall bring you right here on Morning Glory, but at a later date. That is one more reason to tune into Morning Glory every Thursday at 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Meanwhile, here is my question for the listeners of Morning Glory today. Which Sai public service institution recently celebrated its 16th anniversary in the Divine Presence? So please name the institute that recently turned 16 and offered a program in the Mandir this past Sunday. Please email me your answers with your full name and location. That is, I want your city and country. And as always, you can reach me immediately at karuna@radiosai.org. And I'm going to spell it for you. K as in kite, A for America, R for Russia, U for umbrella, N for Nancy, A for America. KARUNA at radiosai, RADIOSAI, it's one word, .org. So I'm looking forward to your replies to my question. Which institute just turned 16 and offered a beautiful program in the Divine Presence in the Mandir this past Sunday? Karuna@radiosai.org is my email. And now it's time for a special conversation with three doctors from the USA. Here it is for your inspiration and your listening pleasure. Sairam, dear listeners, today is the 4th of January 2017. And at Radio Sai, we are honored to have three outstanding medical professionals with us, all of whom are overachievers with enormous hearts. They are Dr. Kalpalatha Guntupalli, Dr. Sridevi Devraj, and Dr. Madhuri Madbhushi, all from Texas, USA. The three ladies are in the Divine Valley to share their knowledge of the latest medical procedures and innovations with the medical fraternity from the Sai healthcare system. The workshops they are running are part of the continuing medical education of Bhagwan's doctors who serve in Baba's general and super speciality hospitals here in Prashantigram, Puttaparthi, as well as in Whitefield, Bangalore. Now, it's quite a challenge to introduce you to these highly qualified guests because their resumes and achievements run into pages. So I'll just give you a brief bio. Dr. Kalpalatha Guntupalli is the Endowed Professor for Pulmonary Disorders, Chief Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Section, Director of Critical Care Fellowship Programs at the prestigious Baylor College of Medicine at Houston, Texas. Now, speaking of her hospital positions, she is the Chief of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep, Director of Medical Intensive Care Unit, Ben Taub General Hospital, Houston, Texas, Chief of Pulmonary Critical Care Sleep at the Texas Children's Pavilion for Women, Chief of Medicine, Texas Children's Pavilion for Women. Wow, that does sound like so many roles. We really need to find out shortly how one person can do so much without even cloning herself. Dr. Guntupalli has broken many glass ceilings on her way to where she is now. For instance, she has held some very important leadership positions in organized medicine. In 1998, she was elected as the first woman president of API, or the American Association of Physicians of Indian Origin, which represents the interest of 50,000 physicians of Indian origin who practice in the United States. In 2010, Dr. Guntupalli served as the president of the 20,000-strong American College of Chest Physicians, a global organization with presence in many countries. Dr. Guntupalli is the recipient of many awards, including the Pravasi Bharatiya Samman, awarded by the President of India to her in 2012. This is the highest award conferred by the President of India on distinguished members of the Indian diaspora to honor exceptional and meritorious contribution in their chosen field or profession and thus enhancing the image of India. Her list of achievements is really long, so I'm going to pause right here and welcome her. Sairam, Dr. Kalpalata Guntapalli, and a very loving and warm welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam Karuna.
So nice to have you finally. Now we also have with us yet another outstanding Indian from Texas, USA. She is Dr. Sridevi Devaraj, PhD, DABCC, which I believe is the diplomat of the American Board of Clinical Chemistry. Currently, Dr. Sridevi Devaraj is the Medical Director of Chemistry and POCT, and POCT stands for the Point of Care Testing at the Texas Children's Hospital. She is another professional with multiple roles, which include being the Medical Director, Texas Children's Health Center Laboratories, Professor of Pathology and Immunology, Baylor College of Medicine, Associate Director, Texas Children's Microbiome Center, Director, Clinical Chemistry Fellowship Program, Baylor College of Medicine, and the Texas Children's Hospital. With much love, I welcome Dr. Sridevi Devaraj to Radio Sai. Sairam, Dr. Sridevi.
Sairam Karuna.
So nice to have you. And finally, I'm honored to welcome Dr. Madhuri Madbushi. She's a family physician from Austin, Texas. She graduated with a degree in medicine from the Gandhi Medical College in Hyderabad, Telangana. And she went on to get her MD from Cooks County, Loyola, Chicago in Illinois, USA. Sairam Madhuri, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you, Karuna.
Ladies, I'm honored to be sitting in your company today. And I do hope you brought a brain shot for me so that my IQ level may rise enough to be able to interview all three of you. I'm feeling extremely inadequate right now. So I'm just going to fall back on Swami and start with his quote. Baba says, "The patient's welfare must be your top priority. Serve them with dedication. Service to patients is service to God. There is no higher service than this." So Dr. Guntapalli, we'll start with you. Since you and your colleagues who are here, you're all very well versed in the ins and outs of American healthcare system, which is highly respected for its professionalism. What is your first reaction to the Sai healthcare system?
I mean, we are all professionals, so professionalism is something that is expected of us. Honestly, it should come naturally, but these are taught in American system. You know, I come from a university with a lot of trainees. So at every level, from medical student all the way to the super specialty trainees, there is something called core competencies. And professionalism is one of the core competencies. Somebody is always evaluated on how they behave with their peers, how they behave with their patients, how they respect other professionals that are in their healthcare team. So this is something called 360. You know, they're judged on, or they're evaluated on, how professionally they are conducting themselves. And these are taught as well. So I think that Swami emphasizing on this so many decades ago, I mean, it's just something that has been popularized in the West probably more recently. So it's really amazing that he actually pioneered it. A lot of values that are being coined now, you know, and branded now, he has actually recommended it and propagated it.
Dr. Sridevi, would you like to add?
The other thing that I would like to add to that is compassionate care and integrity. And these are kind of the basic principles of Swami's healthcare delivery system. So I think professionalism in the workplace, professionalism amongst not only your peers, but also when you're consulting with colleagues, is something that's very important so that you actually deliver whatever healthcare that you can with the utmost respect for everybody's abilities.
Dr. Madhuri?
I would like to add one thing. When you serve your patients with lots of love and compassion, without any discrimination towards your patients, I think you automatically get that professionalism. But as part of our training during residency or throughout the practice, we got this inculcated in the training regarding the professionalism.
When you saw the Sai healthcare system, what were your observations?
I have come into the Sai fold rather late in my life and in my career. But that was the most striking point that was very impressive to me. Just the way they were very humble, down to earth, very professional, very accomplished. Everybody I met, whether they were nurses or doctors or laboratory professionals or whatever they were doing, they were extremely competent, but at the same time, they were down to earth, they were very compassionate, they were very caring. And it was just not something that you would see in every hospital that I have had a chance to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a lot of times a hierarchy, particularly mm-hmm. in Indian medical system, of physicians, non-physicians, and, you know, different type of, you know, work that they're doing. But here I felt that everybody's work was valued and everybody was respected. And I think that really builds a very healthy team that really delivers the best healthcare. And in American system, there is a lot of checks and balances, mm-hmm. and you have what is called Press-Ganey, and there are a lot of scoring systems that physicians, nurses, even the desk clerk that actually checks you in when you go for a doctor's appointment, all of them are judged
mm-hmm.
by anonymously by the patients. They get a review to fill out after they've had a visit or whatever, hospital admission or whatever, and everybody is judged. So, you know, a hospital getting a good name or not a good name is not just the doctor. You know, they may say that, yes, we recommend this doctor for a consultation to my friends, mm-hmm. but they may say the desk clerk stinks. I mean, they didn't talk to me properly. So I think it's a whole system. It's not just the physician is only a small part of any healthcare.
And yes, go ahead, Dr. Madhuri.
To add on to that point, actually, this is upcoming technology hospitals or clinics are using. It's a program where these feedbacks regarding whole clinic visit. I practice as a family physician. Mm-hmm. I work in a clinic setting.
Right.
So each patient, immediately after the visit, they need to give the feedback regarding the whole visit, which I think it imposes the loving and compassionate care and then professionalism.
I see. Perhaps it's the fear of a review also, which is in public domain, because I can Google any doctor and see in America how they are rated by their patients and others. And people leave a lot of comments, you know, as you said, the doctor was okay, but the receptionist was whatever. And so, or I had to wait for a long time. But in the Satya Sai healthcare system, that fear does not exist, because we are not doing this to promote ourselves, as we already have more patients than can be handled, for example. And the one thing that is the cardinal foundation of the system is availability and accessibility to everyone. So that takes away a big component of the healthcare system elsewhere, which is billing. Because here there is no concept of billing. So the financial angle does not exist. The paradigm for motivation is completely shifted.
I think you made an excellent point. The excellent point here is it's not imposed. It's not expected out of you for getting more referrals. Just because it's a free care and unlimited number of patients, so you really don't have to be compassionate. You can spin it the other way. Uh-huh. You're going to get your patients anyway, like any general hospital, for example, anywhere in India.
And yet this is the preferred hospital for patients everywhere, whether it is because they're economically poor or those who are looking for high-quality, compassionate care.
I think that's key that, you know, you touched upon two very important things. One is it's not only for the poor who can't afford good healthcare, but it's also for people that come in to have the best of care and to have it in a way that makes them feel good about it. So the rich person that actually is able to afford good care comes here not because he can't afford better care somewhere else, but because he believes in the system, he believes in the physician, who in fact has a self-imposed, what I would say, regulation or discipline that, yes, I have to give affordable care. It has to be accessible to all, regardless of caste, creed, socioeconomic status, anything. And it has to be compassionate care, right? Because sometimes, as you know, in medicine, you know, every treatment doesn't work for all. And, you know, compassionate care sometimes can do much more than what the highest medical professional can provide.
I would think that since there is no billing department and it's all completely free care, I mean, poor or people who cannot afford, maybe coming there because it is now within their reach. The rich, like Dr. Sridevi was saying, would come in because not just compassionate care, because it's the right care.
Yes, and nobody is going to prescribe a surgery that you don't really need but is driven by the doctor's motivation for billing you.
That's right.
Correct.
So the whole paradigm is why somebody comes here is because it's accessible for somebody who, where it's not accessible elsewhere. Number two, the people who can afford know that the incentive is completely different.
And they want to have the best of the best.
Right.
Dr. Madhuri?
I know Swami since I got married and for the first time when I came to Puttaparthi, I felt so good. And then I got an opportunity to attend a national medical conference in LA where I met so many doctors, listened to what doctors are doing, like volunteering, and then how Swami has told them or told doctors how to practice. So practicing with, you know, without discrimination. In a clinic setting when I work, I see people without insurance also, and then it helped me a lot how physicians should practice with lots of love and compassion.
The ecosystem that Swami has redefined for healthcare delivery, it taps into compassion at its source. Swami said everything should have that angle of love and care, a lot of humanity. Is that something that you see happening here, and how does it compare vis-a-vis the American system?
Absolutely. I mean, I visited the mobile hospital, I visited the general hospital, I visited the super specialty hospitals. So you're going from a setting of taking healthcare to the patient's doorstep, to somebody coming in to a general hospital, to somebody who's very ill requiring a tertiary level of care. So I think every step of the way, every setting, from outpatient all the way to inpatient to ICU setting, what I have seen is absolutely what you're saying is it's a compassionate care and it is very natural. It is coming naturally.
It can't be a contrived put-on act.
Yeah, and probably, you know, there are people who will get through their entire career doing that because they have to do it. But here, you know, they don't have to do it. They don't have to get referrals. Referrals are galore. And they can be complacent because they don't have to get referrals. So I don't see any of that. And I see, in fact, a lot of care and you see that satisfaction in the patients.
Hmm. And as a medical professional, I'm sure there is a great deal of satisfaction there as
well. Oh, absolutely. Otherwise, you know, when I talk to a number of doctors, and, you know, I've been coming back and forth for the last 40, 42 years back to India. So it's not like I have not kept in touch. I do spend quite a bit of time here. And I have a lot of friends who practice, and, you know, in different settings. And I know what any of these doctors could do outside. But these people, they seem to be extremely happy. They are very happy staying in a small setup, or going to mobile hospital, to patients' homes, dealing with various kinds of circumstances. But they seem to be very happy. I have not seen this kind of satisfaction. Otherwise, I mean, they're working very hard, but it seems like it's not a rat race. You know, they're working hard because they're enjoying it. And that shows.
Interestingly, I have always followed the motto. In fact, it's on my board as you enter the office. Work is worship. But the difference that I see here is that they worship the work that they do. And I think that is the big difference.
Hmm. Do you think that the Sai healthcare system can be taken to the other Western countries?
I think that's what they're striving. You know, that's what they're trying to do with all the training and all of those. For example, in U.S. with a population of 300 plus million, about 50 million are uninsured. So there are hospitals set up called safety net hospitals, which are take patients who are underinsured and uninsured, and they're few and far in between. Mm-hmm. And maybe some other private hospitals will take a percentage of patients if there's no safety net hospital available. So I think that, as Swami said, that it is a fundamental right to have access to health care.
Yeah.
And I work in private setting as well as safety net. And I enjoy myself when I'm there in a safety net hospital. when I'm taking care of patients there, I feel a lot of satisfaction because I don't have to worry about, you know, what bill are they getting and, you know, are not getting, can I order this test or not. So it's similar to the setup here, and I can relate to the doctors here because I enjoy, because I know I'll do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. That's true professional satisfaction, Dr. Sridevi.
Yeah, the other thing that I've noticed is that, I mean, they're no less when it compares to technological advances as well. So despite the fact that it's accessible care that you give to everybody, it's care that is top-notch. You know, it's not that it's less than what you would get, for example, at Texas Children's Hospital when you bring your child.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is something that has to be recognized because of the fact that I've seen in other Indian healthcare systems where it's primarily money-driven. Of course, there are some institutions that do a lot of good work, but it comes at the cost of being substandard in the kind of delivery, healthcare delivery that you make. But one very important aspect of healthcare is preventative healthcare. And no healthcare is complete if you're not going to address the preventative healthcare aspect of the problem. And I think Swami has given the perfect formula for that as well.
I think one important point Dr. Sridevi made is that what is being done or offered to these patients and what's being done at the hospitals as far as work is concerned is really top-notch. The other thing that is very impressive, for example, to me, the mobile hospital is the flagship,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the whole system. There are a lot of people who do things, and even in this country and anywhere else, what are these feel-good projects, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I'm not putting their value down, but they are feel-good projects.
And
you feel good. The
good.
Person who is doing feels like...
It's a one-time shot.
It's a one-time shot. Mm-hmm. There's no follow-up. There's no
sustainability.
Logical, there's no logical conclusion to anything. And here you have 11 years of a mobile hospital taking a... Actually, it's a hospital to patients' doorstep. It's not a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you diagnose them with some sort of eye problem. Next visit, they're getting eyeglasses. You pick up some cancer. Next thing is they're going to hospital. I mean, there's a continuity.
Okay.
Continuity from outpatient, from your doorstep, all the way to the very advanced. So I think that is very, very unique and very laudable service.
And as Dr. Narasimhan will tell you, who is the director of the Sri Satyasai Mobile Hospital, he was guided point by point by Swami to the extent that Baba also pointed out that when we go to these nodal villages for the first 14 days of the month with our mobile hospital, the patients, they leave their village so early to get to this spot. So they are hungry. He said, before you treat them, carry food for them and the people chaperoning them. That's the extent of detail. So first they are fed and made comfortable. School buildings are used so that they can use the restrooms, and then the labs and the diagnostic and the pharmacies all set up, and then they're sorted and sent to the right doctor. It's from beginning to end a complete circle, and Swami makes sure that no point is left in that. Now, Swami also made a very important point that the care should be holistic. And when you're in a medical system where, you know, one doctor refers you for your kidneys to the nephrologist and to the cardiologist for your heart issue and the two doctors, and how do you integrate the two different streams of treatment you're getting, here you don't just integrate the streams, you integrate much more. Your thoughts on it, Dr. Sridevi?
Yeah, so many times we've seen, in the interest of getting more patients into hospitals, you have what's called one-stop shop for healthcare, where it's a totally different model. And Swami has defined it in such a way that, you know, you're not only taking care of one aspect of healthcare, but it's a holistic approach where, just like you said, I mean, yes, you can feed your stomach, you can feed your, you know, your mind, because you get education about what not to do for preventative healthcare, and you get treated for not only the symptom, but also the cause.
Hmm. And imagine not having to carry the burden of having to swipe your card or pay at the end. I mean, I use the Sai healthcare system because I live here. I just carry my patient file with me and that's it. I have never even carried my wallet because I leave it in my car, which is parked outside. Because that is the level of freedom we have from any financial burden in this system.
And that's amazing. That's probably not emulated anywhere.
Unheard of.
Unheard of.
I mean, I think that to be able to motivate and inspire so many people to do what they're doing is probably not a human. The reason it is running because so many people are inspired and motivated.
Do you think this Satisai healthcare system is sustainable in the long run? Because up until a few years ago, Baba was personally the force behind it. Do you see such an altruism being carried on and sustained?
I think definitely it is sustainable. I'm an example of somebody who has never really was in the fold when he was in the body. So, I mean, my inspiration came entirely afterwards. So, I don't see why not. And I think that in some ways, that's the one that probably would sustain it, because you're actually seeing the value of what's being practiced here.
And I think what's important is that whoever comes here leaves with so much satisfaction, be it the patient or the doctor or the healthcare worker, that I think the immense joy that you get in whatever you do is itself self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why I think that this is definitely a sustainable model. And, you know, otherwise you would have seen a decline. And you don't see a decline, you see more patients coming in, right?
I think more patients coming is neither here nor there for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is sustainable, but there has to be an engagement by professionals, by not just by volunteering, in whatever way they can. I think that community has to come together, not only the psych community, but whoever, you know, if you're not able to develop it, at least help sustain the model that is working very well. I think that there is a certain feeling that because there's nobody is asking you for anything. It just seems to go on. But that doesn't mean that, you know, people cannot contribute in whatever way they can. They can come volunteer, they can teach. We were just in General Hospital today, and mm-hmm. some of the needs they had were really very, very simple and very easily doable. You know, just being able to participate in a conference and talks. And these are very simple. So, you know, there's so many ways of keeping the interest going for the people who are working here.
And I'm also really enthused by the fact that in recent years you've been very interested in innovation and research. And I think that's a very important aspect of sustaining any kind of system.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the fact that this hospital is born out of determination made from the purest selfless love, I think that motivation has the power to sustain it for a long time. However, the fact that after Baba leaving the body, the hospital has been ranked so highly by the NABH, which is a regulatory body that assesses healthcare systems, and that itself speaks volumes when you spoke about continuing innovation, improvement, in patient care and delivery. We see that happening here all the time. There's been a huge expansion of the Sri Satisai General Hospital in Prashanthi Nilayam. And we have also streamlined our two hospitals in Whitefield. And our general hospital now works within the auspices of the Sri Satisai Super Speciality Hospital in Whitefield. So all this has happened after Baba has left. I think the administrators are very busy around here. And that shows in the rating that we received, which was very high.
I'm not surprised at the rating at all. I mean, just the neatness. I mean, when anybody walks into it, just the structure of the hospital, the way it is maintained, and to think of it that this is all probably maintained 75% by volunteers. People who are volunteers. That is amazing and very admirable, because I think that just shows a community engagement as well.
Now, there were so many American doctors who keep coming here. What is, in your opinion, the take back they have when they go back? And will that have an impact on their practice of medicine?
When they come here and visit, I think they're just blown away at the physical facility and what happens inside, both. It's a beautiful building, and people who work in there are beautiful as well. And they're giving great care. So I think that's something, is just a big surprise to them if they've never been there. I mean, in a very small village, it just comes like a strikingly impressive building. And then what goes on inside, and, you know, in fact, all the patient volumes and the types of cases they see are enormous numbers. So it's not like somebody from there has to come and teach here. They have so much experience and they're doing so well. So I think whoever comes here will go away feeling that this is unbelievable and nobody can, you know, duplicate it. I hope they can. I think this is just a model that needs to be duplicated, you know, for it to have more impact on a larger population. And then I guess when they go back, they take it with them, that this is something that's doable and mm-hmm. has been done.
Yeah, and the feeling of enrichment is what I would say. You know, not only from the diverse cases, the population that they see, but also the extent of care is, I think, unparalleled.
Definitely anybody who comes in, doctors, non-physicians, physicians, definitely get inspired to become a good human being, and definitely doctors will be practicing and hoping for the best mm-hmm. when they go back.
I think a lot of us are like human doings, you know, mm-hmm. we are not human beings. Right. We're just doing things to get more whatever, yeah. to have stuff.
Less being, more doing.
Yeah, that's right. So I think this again gives you a reason to pause mm-hmm. and, you know, examine yourself, where you are, what station you are, where you want to go, and I think it's wonderful.
And it's like it makes you want for more, right? You want to come more and more and serve more. So I think that desire is endless too.
Yeah, I think just from cultural perspective, right. It's just that when the doctor-patient relationship changed to doctor-customer relationship many years ago, mm-hmm. I think we've somehow lost
the spirit of it.
I mean, I'm not trying to put the whole system down, but maybe customer is always right. Maybe the behavior may be the same, but it's not. You've lost somehow.
Even throughout the world, there are a lot of medical missions, but again, I think the motive is different. So it's not selfless service. You know, even when people go for medical missions, there is a different motive in actually participating in mission, whether it be getting some volunteer hours, mm-hmm. whether it be
looking good on your resume,
yeah. or, you know, whether it be getting people into your fold. Mm-hmm. But I think here the difference is that it's selfless service.
So, Dr. Guntupalli, you have extensive clinical experience. After being exposed to the Satisai healthcare model, when you went back, was there a change in the way you handled your patients? And did that trickle into a domino's effect in terms of other medical professionals observing any change in you, if at all?
I don't think it changed how I practiced, but probably it changed how I thought. My own thought process.
I see.
Or, for example, if I would drive for years, I would see a homeless person. And I would just try to avoid that person. And, you know, because I just wanted to avoid. I think after maybe some time, then I said, you know, hunger is same for everybody. Not that I was insensitive or anything. I just didn't want to be faced with it.
You felt
so
uncomfortable?
I don't know. I mean, it's just... Now I would carry something always, and I'm always looking for this person. The same guy at the street corner or somebody, if I can't find him, I want to find somebody else. You know, I just said I'm not going to give this person money because I'm not going to judge him where he's going to spend it, but I'll give him something to eat because I know he's hungry. So, has it affected the way I treat my patients? I don't know. I can't say that. But I think the way I think, or maybe if there's a very difficult situation, I would lean on Swami. And he has always come through.
Mm-hmm. I see. Dr. Sridevi?
I have also felt the same. And I usually never ask Swami for anything because I don't think that I have to ask him for anything. It comes. And when I get into difficult situations, when I don't know what is the right thing to do, all I have to do is think, and the answer somehow shows. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it in words, but it's a feeling of, okay, this is the right thing to do, comes directly, you know, from above.
Mm, like a clarity.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Something will happen to give clarity to the situation that I would be so confused about. Just about 5 minutes back. Mm-hmm. And I never actually have wanted stuff, you know, that I want this, I want that. But then one thing I wanted to do is to serve. And so, you know, I'm actually really thankful for the opportunity to come and actually look at what you're doing and see what I can do in my own life. And I think to answer the question from before is that I think it is a domino effect. The things we do, the things that Dr. Guntupalli does, for example, she stands as an example for people that are junior to her, mm-hmm. and they look up to what she does and say, she is so busy, she does not have to go do these things, and she does this, why is she doing it? And people want to emulate that. And similarly at home, you know, your kids see what you do, and subliminally these messages go to them, and they become better people. So I think there is a domino effect in what you do, and I'll leave it at that.
Dr. Madhuri?
I used to pray, God, I want to become a good physician. I didn't even know what good physician mean. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when I got, you know, introduced to Swami, did my MD, when I started practicing and listening to Swami's discourses, I never listened to him live, but Radio Sai helped me mm-hmm. greatly. That's why definitely appreciate Radio Sai. I love Radio Sai because I can hear Swami's discourses. So when I heard those discourses, I have changed, transformed slowly. And then I thought Swami gave me this role of physician, but I'm just playing the role. And I'm not the physician. I'm not doing anything Swami is making me do. And then when I see some of sick patients, I feel for them. And then I pray, Swami, so just give strength to deal with this situation and then through the healing process.
All three of you sound very reverential when you refer to Swami. Is there an iota of regret that you've started getting involved in his healthcare medicine much after he has left the body?
I mean, I think probably there's a time for everything. Probably this is a time for me. That's why I got involved. So there's no right or wrong answer. But I think that's just a matter of when it's supposed to happen.
Yes.
I agree. And everybody is in a different path, and all paths lead to the same goal. So whenever and whichever path you take, I think as long as you reach the goal, that's exactly where it should be. And in my case, I actually think even that happened for a reason, that I came into Swami's fold only after his physical body, his physical form, was not with us. And I think because I'm a very passionate person, and I kind of tend to, you know, if I was so attached to the form, I'm not sure I would have been the same person. So, like I said, I think everything happens for a reason.
And a good reason.
Yeah. And that's what I think has brought me here, actually, to Puttaparthi.
And I honestly don't think that we're doing some big service or anything.
I think it's just development of our own selves.
Yeah. You're very humble ladies. Now, when you go back and you will have co-workers who are all also eminent doctors like yourselves, what do you tell them? Why do you take this trip to India? Where did you go and what did you do? What will be your paraphrase to them? Dr. Madhuri, we'll start with you.
So before I came to India, my friends, colleagues asked me, what are you going to do? And it's a different experience. I'm going to learn a lot. At the same time, I would get some satisfaction doing something and learning and sharing.
And what was their reaction?
A lot of them sounded positive. One of my nurses told, oh, I would love to go with you.
Mm-hmm. I see. Dr. Sridevi?
So I think this is very common in other cultures, that they take a year off, 6 months off, whatever time they can, especially after graduation or anything, that they make it a point to actually spend some time doing service. And I think in general, Asian Indians like us are so driven that there's nothing else that we think of other than achieving all those awards, those certifications, those positions, that we kind of tend to lose that aspect of service that is so essential in opening up one's character. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great opportunity that we've had to look into ourselves and say, yes, is this what you want to do? And embrace everybody that does it and tell everybody else, hey, you know, what a great experience this is. You should try it sometime.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Dr. Guntupalli?
Yeah, I have to agree with Dr. Sridevi. I think that we see that quite a bit there. I mean, people are doing medical missions and, you know, not everybody, but it's not uncommon at all. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of them are volunteering and, you know, doing that. So for them, they feel that, you know, these guys are busy, but, you know, they're using their vacation to do this. And if somebody is asking, I'll just pull up the hospitals and the pictures and everything. I'll say, hey, there's no billing department here. And look what they're doing.
Do people believe what you're saying?
No, they don't. They just say, oh, my goodness. A lot of them say, can we go with you next time? And, you know, honestly, it's not even the Americans. It's a lot of Indians don't even know about it. And I think this is something I feel that growing up here, you know, of course, I left right after medical school, but we're just so driven exam after exam, you know.
Schools.
Oh, you're 16 and you're, you know, you're going to lose a year, you're going to lose 6 months and a whole life. What does it make? It makes no difference, 6 months to a year or whatever. But I guess it's a competitive nature of the population or the drive to not lose time and all of those. So I think that this is something we have not been able to really foster in the kids and make it as a culture, which I think it still is not seen here in India, I feel. In US, that they always volunteer, right, from even middle school, high school. They volunteer in the hospital. They're pushing the wheelchairs. They're pushing the trolleys. Not some fancy volunteering. They're taking blood tubes to the lab. They're just, you know, reading to the patients, just maybe singing to the patients, yeah, or whatever.
Only
something.
The babies.
Yeah. I think that that's something I see not much encouraged or not being part of their growth here.
Dr. Guntupalli, you're a person of great influence within the American medical fraternity and also amongst the Indian physicians who practice there, and there's a sizable community. So Dr. Guntupalli, when you go back, what do you tell your colleagues about the experience? How will you describe it?
I would say that I've been to a place that provides care from even before you're born to cradle to all the way when you're very sick to later in your life, and where the medical care comes to your doorstep if you can go to the hospital. And then it's compassionate. It's there's no billing department. You don't have to worry about getting a bill in your mail or collection agencies calling you, which is, you know, unfortunately happens both in India as well as rest of the world. And it is top-notch care on top of it all. So I think that this is, for medical care, it's heaven on earth. I mean, you got everything. So I think I would say that there is a place that exists like that.
Even though it's hard to believe.
That's correct.
Correct.
Dr. Sridevi?
I would say that I've been to a place of peace, of love, of unparalleled healthcare delivery. And Swami said that be the change that you want to see.
Right.
And I tell everyone that I see, you know, come and experience that change.
Well, Dr. Kalpalata Guntupalli, Dr. Sridevi Devraj, and Dr. Madhuri Madhubhushi, I want to thank you ladies very much for sparing your time and sharing your thoughts and insights with us at Radio Sai.
Thank you, Karuna, for doing this. We join you.
Thank you, and Sai Ram.
Thank you, Sai Ram. Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Today is the 2nd of February 2017, and the time in the ashram right now is exactly 28 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. And we are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the seat of supreme truth, absolute auspiciousness, and ultimate beauty. Dear listeners, you just heard a special conversation with three doctors from the United States of America, namely Dr. Guntupalli, Dr. Devraj, and Dr. Madhubhushi. Your feedback is very important to us. So please share your thoughts, comments, and suggestions to this special conversation on the Sai Healthcare System with three doctors from America. You can send us your emails at listener@radiosai.org. And now, here is the answer to today's question that I posed earlier. The institution that just turned 16, the Sai Institution, is the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Whitefield, Bangalore. And recently it celebrated its 16th anniversary in the Divine Presence. And the following listeners got the answer right, and congratulations go out to Brother Sai Krishna of Hyderabad, Telangana, India, one of the first to always respond, obviously a Sai student. Brother Ajay Rajan from Chennai, another eager beaver who's always one of the earlier respondents.
He's from Chennai, Tamil Nadu, India. Sister Annapurna Bala, Mrs. Meenakshi Velmurugan from New Delhi, India. Mrs. Padmavati from Chennai, Tamil Nadu. Sister Babita Mehtani from Hong Kong. Vijaykant Rajan from Shivam in Hyderabad, that is Swami Center in Hyderabad. Brother Devraj from Dubai. Sister Usha K from Chennai, Tamil Nadu. Brother Ravi Ranganathan from Singapore. Sister Rekha Loknath from Mysore, Karnataka. Sridhar Shweta Sai, age 13, and Shreya Sai, age 6, from Irvine, California, USA. Veda Patel and Rahul Patel from Johannesburg, South Africa. Mrs. Raji Venkat from Mumbai, Maharashtra. Mridula Murthy from Bangalore, Karnataka. Bala from Bahrain. Sister Regina Pillay from Johannesburg, South Africa. And finally, I just want to say I also received an instant feedback to the interview as I was playing it from Toronto, Canada, from Brother Yog Kumar Nadaraja, who really liked something that Dr. Sridevi Devraj said, which was, although people say that work is worship, here in the Sai healthcare system, people worship their work. So thank you, Brother Yoga, and a nice compliment for Dr. Sridevi's observation there. So thank you, everybody who participated in today's quiz. With that, I'm going to leave you to enjoy the conclusion of Trisway Divinity with Mr. Hari Ranjan Rao. But before that, I want to read out something to you from a divine discourse, something to ponder over. Because, dear sisters and brothers, there is an unlimited number of excuses we can all have in our personal lives to avoid going for our service activities, our seva activities in the Samiti, in the Sai Center. So here's something from Swami that might help you to make up your mind whether it's worth your while to plunge into Sai activities or should we all sit on the periphery, go sometimes, not go sometimes, because, you know, we all have reasons, some of which some at times may just be excuses. So here's a quote from Bhagwan Baba, and Baba says, and I quote him, "I'm starting a Seva Samiti. The persons who become members of this Samiti and perform selfless service will be liberated from the cycle of birth and death. Not only they, but also their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. But the test will be severe. I will see how many will withstand this trial and emerge victorious in the end." Unquote. Wow, what a declaration. So keeping that in mind, I think anybody who's looking to fast track and have a diplomatic visa to end this, to Nirvana, the one route, the sure shot, guaranteed, with no small print route, is selfless seva. And the Sai organization gives us ample opportunity, whether we can do it from home, online, or in the center. It doesn't matter what the magnitude of our seva is. It's the intention, the love, the purity with which we can offer our time, our effort, our energy, our resources, our talents at the lotus feet. I hope you can think about it and keep that in mind, because I think all of us can use a reminder every now and then. Now with that, I'm going to leave you to enjoy this Trisway Divinity, and as I sign off, I wish you well. I hope you have a sisome, awesome day ahead. So please be well. Keep seeking and do whatever it takes to stay inspired and focused on the positive. Over now to my colleague, Brother Bishop Rushti, in conversation with Mr. Hari Ranjan Rao. This is the conclusion of this two-part episode of Trisway Divinity. Please enjoy and do remember to send us your feedback at listener@radiosai.org. Till we meet next Thursday, Jai Sai Ram.
And if you have to continue the conversation on our conviction in Bhagwan, you know, in your talk you mentioned that initially, even though you had this strong faith in Bhagwan and you always believed in his teachings, still when you joined the government service, public service, you had this tendency to hide your association with Bhagwan. You thought, you know, that might not work to your advantage, or someone might question about your devotion to Bhagwan. And so it was always you were on the back foot when it came to your association with Bhagwan. But later on, you said you became very open about it, very confident about it, very cool about it. So how did this transformation happen?
Well, I always used to put vibhuti on my forehead.
Okay.
So that itself was a matter of great amusement to my colleagues. Because even in my training in Mussoorie, when I used to put vibhuti, everybody would look at me and, you know, either pass a comment or just make fun of me. That here comes some devotee of some lord, kind of, you know, that stuff. Because in our modern world, the sign of modernity is to be less spiritual.
Yes.
And more so, at least you should not appear to be spiritual, even if you are spiritual in the core.
Yeah, it should be something very private.
Very private. Yeah. So, initially, yes, it used to be a little awkward. But after coming to service also, I used to come to Puttaparthi in world conferences, youth conferences. So, gradually I decided that, see, Swami is for me and I am His devotee. So, if I am going to keep a picture of His in my room, this is not going to be a problem to anybody else. And if it's a problem, it's their problem, it's not my problem. So, I keep a picture of Swami. This is not to flaunt or this is not to, you know, tell everybody else who's coming to my room that you pray to my Lord. But there is no harm in telling everybody that I pray to this Lord.
Yes.
And this is what is my God. That's all. That's the only thing I do. But the miracles that happened after that are are phenomenal. Because anybody who enters your room, if he looks at Swami's photo, so either he reveals to me that I have also been to Puttaparthi or my uncle or aunt is also Sai devotee, something of that kind. Or they would smile and they would at least know that I am a God-fearing man and I have a God here sitting in my room whom I rever.
Yes.
That itself is a big statement.
Correct.
So, what's wrong in making a statement that I am a God-fearing man and I have respect for my Lord? There is nothing wrong in it. It helps.
It helps, actually.
Yeah. See, if it is fashionable to show around that I am not, you know, a believer of God. It should be fashionable also to declare that I am a believer of God.
Yes.
Why can't this be a fashion?
Exactly. In fact, that's what I used to feel at many times, that, you know, it should be fashionable for us to live His teachings. Because, you know, because that gives a kick to us.
Absolutely, yes. And again, the bottom line is, am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
I'm not doing something wrong. I'm only saying that I believe in this God.
Yeah.
What's wrong in that?
Yeah.
If you don't believe, that's your problem. Fine.
As Bhagwan used to say.
We are not going to argue on this subject.
Correct. Yeah.
But I have a right to make my statement.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And as you very rightly said, I think the messages that go out actually work to your advantage.
Absolutely, yes. You see, the moment you make a statement, you put Swami's picture in your room, or you put Vibhuti very strongly. These days, of course, I have also started putting some bhajans or some music at the background. The person who enters your room, you know, he gets conditioned.
Yes.
80% of his negativity is already neutralized.
So he cannot think about saying or doing anything.
Exactly, exactly. So if he has come up with some bad intention or to say something negative, he will have to muster 100% more courage to be able to overcome all this and still say this. So you are making situation conducive to yourself.
You are only encouraging the goodness in him.
Absolutely. So I think, therefore we need to be bold in our statements.
Yes.
You know, a couple of years back when we had not banned smoking in India, people who used to smoke, and I have nothing personal against people who smoke because every human being is a good human being.
Yes.
And many of my very good friends who smoke are perfect and fine human beings, so I love them. But as a matter of fact, we know that as a habit, smoking is a bad habit.
Yeah.
But you know that all the TV advertisements and movies and all, anybody who smokes is considered to be a hero. And by corollary, if you are not smoking, you are a dump. Right? This is how the perception goes. That's how, as a child, we look at and wow, I mean, what a great hero. I mean,
hey, someone who's lost, you know, missed all the fun in life.
Yeah, and and somebody smoking is a macho man. You know, that kind of an image used to be created.
Yeah.
But now we have a law where smoking in public is banned. And now I am more courageous. If somebody smokes, I stare at him and the person suddenly feels guilty. And he tries to hide his cigarette and he goes and tries to, you know, avoid smoking in public. So, it's just a question of perception.
Yes.
So I am saying that I believe in my Lord and I am displaying it. why am I shy about it?
Yes.
So this is the difference. I think we need to be very clear about it.
And I think with generally happens that I've seen with youngsters, initially they think it's a weakness, but later on, as you very beautifully have also experienced, it becomes actually your strength in unimaginable ways.
Absolutely. It's a great strength.
It's a great strength.
It's a great strength, and if you believe it, then it can work for your advantage at every step.
Yes.
It becomes your shield, in fact.
Becomes your shield. Wow. Amazing. So can I just change track slightly? Because you are someone who has been so passionate about this country, about India, and someone who has also inspired so many youngsters. Because recently when I had gone to Madhya Pradesh and had chance to interact with so many youth and so many people who are very active members in the organization, they have been really inspired by you, you know, the way you have led your life as a Balvikas alumni. So can I ask you, what are those aspects of Indian culture and India that you have made it a part of your life and that has really inspired so many people to actually become patriotic as well as work for Swami?
Well, if you look at aspects of Indian culture, to be fair to any other culture of the world, the only culture I have been brought up in is Indian culture. So I'm proud of it, and whatever values I have imbibed in are from Indian culture. So I really don't know what other cultures would have taught to their children. I'm sure they must be equally beautiful, equally sweet, and equally strong in the value system. But yes, certainly, because I have been born and brought up in my Indian culture, I'm very proud of it, and I very strongly believe that it has built my foundations in a big way. Now, if you want to know what is it that is in Indian culture which makes me strong, I may not be able to put it in very few words, but suffice it to say that that's what exactly is the essence of Balvikas.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever you learn in Balvikas in those 3, 4, 5 years or 6 years is exactly building your strong roots in respect and reverence for Indian culture. And if you want me to give some examples, then respect for parents, respect for teachers, respect for one's own scriptures, and
yes,
respect for one's own traditions. All this is part of Indian culture, which I think has helped me build my foundation.
And what is the idea of India that you want every youngster to be proud of, to know first and then to be proud of?
Well, first of all, I am a great optimist. So, I really do not like the conversation when people say that, well, India has missed it and India has lost the opportunity. And I hate people trying to compare India with other countries and say, look, we are 100 years behind or 50 years behind or 30 years behind. All this is not a good comparison. Because when we make these kind of comparisons, they are mostly on economic parameters.
Yes.
And it is true that economically India is not as strong or as good today as many other developed countries are. But then that's a very short-term phenomenon. In another 30, 50 years, Indian economy may actually take over many other economies of the world. We are already in that league now.
Yes.
We know it.
Yes.
And but because of economic deprivation, we do have a lot of problems in the society which we need to address. So I take it as a challenge, but as I told you, I am a great optimist. So I would like to change these things in my own lifetime. I would like to see things happening in my own lifetime. I can make that change. I firmly believe in this. Swami has given us enough life. All of us have an average life of 60 to 70 to 80 years. Big enough. If I want to make that change, I can bring it. Why do you want to wait for the next generation? I will try to bring that change in my own lifetime. If I am not, then I'll ask my next generation to continue the job. But what is it that change that I am looking forward to? Basic issues of hunger, poverty, inequality, equal opportunity to every citizen of this country, that I want to achieve. beyond that, I think it's subjective. So, the strength of this nation, this country, this land lies in not 50, 100 or 200 years of history, but thousands of years of history. Now, I cannot therefore just shrug aside all that historical strength of this nation and simply try to compare it with some GDP numbers and say that, look, we have made a mess of ourselves. Maybe we have made, but we can get out of it very soon.
And, but as you said, that's just one parameter. There are so many things that are not looked into.
Yes.
And so many things that can be cannot be measured.
Absolutely. See, one good example is hospitality or happiness.
Yes.
You know, again, wrongly, Indians or Indian cities are branded that we don't, are hospitable, or for that matter, we are not law-abiding citizens, and blah, 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 cities are dirty and filthy and all that. But the real India doesn't live only in four or five cities.
Correct.
It's a vast country. You drive down to any village, no village will ever let you go hungry.
Yes.
No village will ever allow you to sleep on the street. Somebody will come and say, come, sleep in our place. So that basic Indianness, we should be proud of.
Yes.
And that is what makes India unique. That is what makes this country unique. It's love, love and love. Although love again is a universal phenomenon, it is not restricted only to India. But it is there in India also. So I'm proud of it.
Yes. As Gandhiji used to say, India lives in its villages.
Absolutely.
And I think
yes.
And the culture of India is still there.
You know, I have been brought up in a small town called Mandla in district Madhya Pradesh. Mandla is a very beautiful town which has Narmada River flowing around the town. And my mother, she was a very devout believer of Bhagwan. She was also a great devotee of Narmada River.
Okay.
Because Narmada in Madhya Pradesh is revered like goddess.
Yes.
Like Ganga.
Yes.
So, in Narmada there is a very unique tradition that people walk on foot from Amarkantak, which is the origin of Narmada, right up to Bharuch, where it goes and meets in Arabian Sea. Mm-hmm. And they walk back. It's called Narmada Parikrama.
Okay.
It's a tradition which is many hundreds years old.
Mm-hmm. And so how many kilometers is
it? It's 1332 kilometers.
Oh.
1332 kilometers one way.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes many years to do Narmada Parikrama, but people do it. And many villages, they do it. Now the tradition in Narmada Parikrama is that when you are traveling, you are not supposed to cook food and you are not supposed to carry. And in any case, you can't carry so many things for 1000 kilometers. So every village on the bank of River Narmada is tuned to accept Parikrama Vasi, feed them, make them stay in their houses.
Wow.
And only, like, we all have one common thread, Sai Ram. The moment you say Sai Ram, no other language is needed, no other description is needed. Similarly, on the banks of Narmada, the moment you say Narmade Har, that means you are a Narmada Parikrama Vasi, and now it is the responsibility of the villagers to take care of the person.
They take care of you. Wow.
So this tradition, where do you look at this tradition?
Wow.
This is what is the real India is.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. In fact, I'm reminded of one conversation that I had with Mr. Swaminathan Gurumurthy. And when we were talking about Indian culture, he just gave one example. He said that, just imagine the social security system in our country where, you know, it is just natural for us to look after our parents if there is a handicapped child. If, you know, in every family there would be so many people who are dependent on one person to support, and they all do it as a matter of duty, you know, as a common practice. But you are saying, but there are many countries where all these, you know, old people have to be looked after by the government, and any handicapped child has to be looked after by the government. It's almost like the family is being nationalized and the government is being privatized, because the government has to look after all the families. But he said, if you can you even imagine if all these people who are dependent on one person in a family, if they were to be state's burden, Can you imagine how much would have been the social security cost?
Correct.
By giving the example of US, he said it would have been like 4 or 5 times the GDP of the country.
Yes.
To look after.
So yes, all this family tradition, family values. Yes. This is all part of our rich Indian culture. True.
It's really amazing. And again, because and what you are telling is, you know, even economically it makes sense. Our culture pays.
Yes. Yeah, it pays.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that matter, this is again very typical to Indian culture where we are spendthrift.
Yes.
You know, so you will not find a traditional Indian family spending too much of money on show off.
Yes.
Now, of course, in some neo-rich families in urban areas, things are changing.
Yeah, otherwise.
But generally, in traditional family, you will not find people spending yes. money on show and pomp. Yes. That is, again, very unique to Indian culture.
Yes. Today, you know, even as you were talking about how the government is slowly also realizing the importance of human values, you know, and you mentioned about that incident where because of that girl who was violated in Delhi and which became a big news, you know, when you were talking about it, when you came to the end of that story, you mentioned that it is because of that incident that there was this committee set up by the government to look into how to prevent such incidents in India, and that led to the chief minister thinking seriously about incorporating human values. And you know, when I thought about it, I thought everything actually has so many sides to it. At that point in time, it seemed like the most you know, sad thing to have happened to this country, but I think everything has a purpose. Now when you think about it, okay, unless something like this would have happened, perhaps the government would not be so serious about inculcating human values. So maybe everything is not all that all that sad and all that wrong, you know. Everything perhaps with time is leading towards something good.
That's right. I personally feel that all governments all the time want good of their people. It's just that how they pick up their priorities over a period of time. And again, the priorities keep changing with time.
Yes.
So, it is good that today, now the governments have started thinking in terms of value education. Because a nation and its health and its fabric is decided by its value system.
Correct.
Not by its wealth or its GDP. And the moment the country starts getting threatened by the fabric of loss of value system, then we are at a greater risk.
Yes.
Than getting war into.
Correct.
Or getting attacked by neighboring countries, or for that matter even loot and all. It's the moral fabric of the nation that has to remain intact. And yes, it's happy news. Governments have now started thinking in terms of value education, and we need to further work on it to strengthen it and ensure that our education system become much more inclined towards value education.
You know, you interact with so many Sai devotees, and there are a few people who say that you know, the Bhagwan came for the re-establishment of dharma, and there was a purpose of the Sai Avatar to repair the highway to God and to establish truth and righteousness. And so there are some people who say that, you know, the avatar came and the avatar actually left his mortal coil, and but the world is still the same place. There is still so much of unrest, and there is still so much of not so pleasant things happening. You keep reading about them in the newspaper. So what happened to the avatar's mission? If someone were to ask you this question, what would you like to say?
Well, my answer would be like this. Do we still read Ramayana? Do we still read Bhagavad Gita? Do we still read Bhagavat? Krishna is gone long back. Rama went back in Treta Yuga. Krishna went back in Dwapar Yuga.
Hmm.
Why do we now talk about them now? Even today, we derive lot of value systems and lot of teachings from the life of Lord Rama.
Yes.
Does that mean that Rama has become now irrelevant because the Treta Yuga is gone? So it's really not so. Secondly, Swami's mission was actually to do the continuation of these earlier avatars' mission of bringing you know, of arising divinity in latent in every human being. Now, this is a process. This will not happen overnight. He has laid the path. He has laid the foundation. We are all part of that mission. As long as we are alive, we have to keep working on that mission. So we cannot just, you know, give up and say that, look, because Swami has now left, his job is over. Or if he has not completed his job, my job is over. My job has now begun. Actually, Swami has only given me a small tool. He said, go, use this tool and make the change. So we are all Swami for that matter, because Swami is in all of us. Swami as a body is not the real representation of Swami, that we all know. Swami himself has been saying in all his speeches, he says, this body is suffering, why do you worry? He never said, my body is suffering.
Correct.
So Swami is in all of us. And as long as Swami is in all of us, how can his mission die?
So the mission, as he very beautifully said, it is not his mission. It is.
It's our mission.
It's our mission.
It's our mission. And again, mission for whom? It's mission for me.
Not for him.
Not for him. Number one. Number two, he did not bring a mission for a set of people. Okay, these are the 10 people whom you reform and the mission is over. So each one of us need to be reformed. So yes. It's a continuous process.
Yes.
So if I get completely reformed, I get merged in him, my mission is over. But there will be 100 more people whose mission will go on.
Yes.
So, you see, morality in the society, negativity in the surroundings, all these are again very subjective creatures. Correct. If I as an individual are ready to listen and change myself, I think I am contributing towards the mission of Swami.
Yes.
So, therefore, naysayers who say that Swami went from his body early and now his mission is stopped are, I think, grossly underestimating or ignorant about the real mission of Swami.
Yes.
I can only say this.
The mission is always on.
Mission is always on because each one of us is a missionary.
Correct.
And Swami is in all of us.
Yes.
So all of us, by our acts, are actually spreading his message.
Yes.
And trying to convince everybody around and trying to fulfill his mission.
Yes. If you believe that he is divine, then you cannot restrict him to the body. And if you cannot restrict him to the body, then you cannot say that the mission is, where is the mission gone?
Yes.
He is there, so the mission is there.
And changes of this nature happen over generations.
Correct.
It took so many generations for us to get spoiled. How do we expect to change everything in one generation? So,
correct.
I think it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, and the other thing that you also mentioned, which just came to me as you were talking, you know, you mentioned about Rama and Krishna. If you actually see, during Rama time, the world and the level of dharma that was there, it actually came down in Krishna's time.
Yes.
And after Krishna's time, it came down further. So the avatars came and went, and actually dharma came down. And in fact, this question was once put to Bhagwan. I mean, the way it happened is, Swami was giving discourses on Bhagavad Gita, and there were these two teachers who were having this conversation in the college. He's saying, you know, Krishna says, that yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharati, whenever there is decline in righteousness, I come. And what is this here? Every time the Lord comes and goes, there is only decline of dharma. So what is this establishment of dharma that the Lord was doing? And the next day, in the Bhagavad Gita series of discourses, Swami said that there are some people who think like this, and Swami said, please know what is that dharma that the Lord comes to establish every time. The Lord comes to establish the prema dharma, and it is only to let everyone connect with God, to establish everyone's love for God. So that has always happened. Every time he came, you felt more people fall in love with Krishna. Now you have more and more people have fallen in love with Bhagwan, rather risen in love with Bhagwan.
Correct.
And I think that is such a fantastic thing. I think if there are millions today who love Bhagwan and for Bhagwan's sake are willing to bring any change in themselves and change around, I think that is the greatest thing that will happen in the current times.
And avatars, when they come and they go, they leave a permanent imprint.
Correct.
For people to follow, for the human mankind to follow. Even now, you would find millions of people on this earth who would get overnight transformed by love of Lord Krishna.
Yes.
Or for that matter, Lord Rama.
Yes.
Even now, you would find that in somewhere, in some village where Ramakatha is going on, somebody will start crying and somebody will get transformed because he gets impressed by his character of Hanuman, or he gets impressed by character of Lakshman or Bharat.
Correct.
How do you know?
Yes.
Does that mean that Ram failed in his duty when he was in his avatar time? So it's amorphous kind of an effect which keeps permeating the entire atmosphere.
Correct.
So that's how it is going to grow, that's how it is going to spread.
Yes.
When I'm talking about Swami's love today, whether Swami is here in his physical form or not, he is still very much alive in the conversation.
Yes.
That's how the mission spreads.
Yes, yes. And in fact, today also, if you see, whenever even a TV serial is made on the mythological characters, it gets so much viewership.
Absolutely. Because and people again try to connect.
Connect. Yeah.
Again, the human nature is to try to be the ideal one.
Yes.
Right?
Everybody longs to be that.
Longs to be that. And therefore, if you are trying to be an ideal one, intermittently you need to have an ideal in the society whom you can relate with.
Yes.
Today the problem is that I cannot relate with Rama or Krishna because those were in any case ideal times.
Yeah.
But here I can think of at least achieving 1% of what Swami was all about. So, Swami in God in human form has an advantage for the current generation that people can relate to.
Yes, and I think that's how hundreds of students and devotees were able to establish that connection with Bhagwan. And even now it is happening in its own beautiful and inimitable way. So, on this topic, would you like to share some of your beautiful moments with Bhagwan in Prashanti Nilayam?
Well, I was, whenever I used to come to Prashanti Nilayam, one incident which I told you when I was a small child and I was giving, serving drinking water in the Hillview Stadium and I got Swami's infinite bliss and love. Otherwise, I was part of Seva Dal activities here, Prashanti Seva I would do, and we would get Pada Namaskara from Swami. Swami never gave an interview, but to be very honest, I never longed for an interview. In fact, I always used to have this argument with my mother, because my mother wanted an interview. And my father was a very different kind of person. He would always come and sit in one corner of Sai Kulwant Hall. He would never rush for the front row and all that. He said, come on. So I always felt that my father was very, very evolved soul, because he said, this kind of running around is not needed. Swami's grace is there anywhere you sit. It doesn't make a difference. So I was a great believer of that thought. So I never ran around trying to get Swami's darshanam, pada namaskaram, sambhashanam or interview. But Swami was still compassionate always to give me those opportunities. So in last couple of years when I came, I used to be allowed to sit in the veranda. And Swami would come, he would speak to me softly, politely. And one word from Swami is enough for you to get energized for next, you know, 1 year.
Yes.
Like that. One incident which I remember very distinctly was when my mother wrote a book. She actually wrote dramas for Balvika's children.
Okay.
And it was her wish that it be printed. But she said, without Swami's blessings, I will not go for printing. So I said, okay. And I brought that manuscript with me and I sat in the veranda. And when Swami was leaving in his golf cart, he looked at me with great compassion and he called me, he said, come. And he made a gesture. So I ran towards him and then he just looked at the book and he was very happy. He said, I'm very happy, very happy. And my mother was like, her life was made. I finally got that book printed also. So, Swami has been infinite as in compassion. One incident when I had come with my brother-in-law and his family to Puttaparthi quite a few years back, around 10, 15 years back. And a daughter of my brother-in-law, we were staying in North Block in some room and she was playing outside and she fell down and perhaps she seriously injured her elbow. And she was crying like as if she has fractured her bone. We really didn't know what to do. We were really panic. And the child was not consolable. So we immediately took her in our arms and we rushed towards the hospital. Now that was a time when darshan was to start. It was in the evening time around 4:30. So we had a dilemma also because we were supposed to turn left and go towards Kulwant Hall or turn right and go towards the hospital. And so we said, no, first child is crying, we cannot take the chance, let's go to the hospital first. And we started running towards the hospital, and in the hospital they said, doctors have gone for darshan, so you come after darshan. So we again long faced, we came back for darshan, and we sat in at the last corner of Kulwant Hall because the child was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And that young girl was in my lap.
Mm-hmm.
When I entered the Kulwant Hall, the child was sobbing still. I started praying to Swami intently. I really remember even to this day, I closed my eyes and I started praying, Om Swami, Om Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram. Swami, you have to cure this child. Swami, you have to cure this child. And Swami came for his darshan. I was very far off in the corner. He could not have even looked at me. But I kept praying. And when the Swami went around and he went inside for interviews to his interview room, there was little bit of relaxation in the hall because Swami's physical presence was out of the sight. And I looked at the child. She stood up and started playing.
Oh my God.
She started playing.
Hmm.
And I was shocked. It was a miracle that I had seen myself because she could not move her limb. She was not allowing us to touch her hand. And now she suddenly stood up and she started playing. And then we decided to take her to the doctor, but she was a normal child. So we just thanked Swami and went back. Matter ended there. So it happens.
Amazing. Amazing. I think I remember there was one occasion when a devotee whom Swami used to talk, she had come to Parthi and Swami did not talk for 2-3 days. And you know, she was very despondent. And after a few days, Swami comes in the dream of her sister and Swami says, why is she crying? And Swami says that, you know, when somebody is already family, look after your family members, or if there is a guest, do you look after the guest first? She's already family.
Amazing.
Why does she expect that I should always treat her like a guest?
Yes. No, it's really helpful to treat Swami like a family member, and then you can be quite relaxed.
You can be relaxed.
And my life become very stressful in Prashanti.
And amazing. And I think once you treat him like that, he also looks after you like that.
Yes.
Just as you have experienced. Amazing. And Prashanti becomes your home.
It's your home. True.
So, how has this trip been, and what is going to be your most cherishable moment from this trip to Prashanti? I think this was perhaps a very different trip when you actually spoke next to Bhagwan's Sanidhi in Sai Kulwant Hall. So what is it that you're carrying from this trip back to Indore?
I'm first of all, I'm still to come with the terms that I was standing there on the podium and delivering a lecture today, because I think it was really Swami's infinite grace that I got that opportunity. I will cherish it for my lifetime. And another memory which I'll always carry is this such nice conversation with you today.
Oh, come on. I think it's really Swami's blessing to us, to all of us, that, you know, you could come. I know it's very late in the night and you had a very long day. We had a very extended Sai Kulwant Hall session. It is already 11 in the night, and I thought you will not have the patience and the strength to go on for another 2 hours after such a long sitting in the Sai Kulwant Hall. But it's really Bhagwan's grace that, you know, you are so enthusiastic and you took the trouble to come. Thank you so much, sir, for this very, very special episode of Trist with Divinity.
Thank you, Prashti. Thank you very much. And thank you all the dear listeners.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
from 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live. Radio Sai Thursday.